Okay, it's great to be back with you at GoldSeek.com Radio for another Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, Peru Saxena from Peru Saxena Wealth Management. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Peru Saxena, the founder and CEO of Peru Saxena Wealth Management based in Hong Kong. Welcome back, Peru.
My pleasure, Chris.
You know, I'd like to begin, if we could, with the precious metals sector. How long have you been coming on the show? It has to be seven or 8 years now, Peru. I know that you have been somewhat down on the sector. You were correct all throughout most of 2013. So far, though, 2014 is shaping up, at least early on, to be quite an improvement over last year for gold investors. So I'd like your analysis on the sector and whether or not you buy this market bottom hypothesis.
Well, sure, Chris. We got out of precious metals in September, October 2011 and stayed out of the sector all throughout. And only recently, earlier in the month, we've got a buy signal again on both gold as well as silver. So we are now back in the bullish camp. We think that the market has made a valid double bottom. And if you look at the price of gold as well as silver, and most importantly, the miners, all of them have now gone above all the key moving averages, something which hasn't happened in a long time. If you look at the price of gold, it is trading above the 200-day moving average. Silver is also trading above the 200-day moving average. And the Amex Gold Bugs Index is also trading above the 200 moving average. Given the fact that the precious metal sector was so bombed out, there is a real possibility of a tradable rally here. I'm not going to put my neck out and say, well, how high is it going to go and how long is it going to go on for? I'd leave that to some of the other people. But all I see is positive price action. The charts are telling us that we've had some sort of a bottom in place. Whether it was the bottom, I don't really know. But all I do know is that the trend is up for now. And this is a good low-risk entry point to buy the metals, or if you own some, to accumulate some more.
We see identical things in the market, but we see it from a slightly different vantage point. I mean, you're following the 200-period moving average on the daily chart would be my guess. I follow the 50-period moving average on the weekly chart. Technically speaking, I just see fireworks ahead. We've seen a rounding bottom here, just like we saw, I think, in 2008. Once again, the XAU and the miners are leading the way. We like to see during bull markets, as I know you follow as well, relative strength in the equities compared with bullion. They tend to lead the market, and that is certainly a big positive. They were remarkably oversold, hitting 80-90% off on many of these top names, some of which have fantastic earnings, revenues, discounted cash flow numbers. And another interesting aspect here, we're starting to see some developments in the U.S. dollar. You know, the greenback breaking through some key support, a lot of sluggishness and weakness. It's had 3 years to put in a bottom, just hasn't been able to maintain any momentum on the upside. I'd like your comments on the greenback, please.
The greenback has weakened as well, you're right. If you look at the U.S. dollar index on the daily chart, you'll note that it's actually hit the 200-day moving average a couple of times and it's come right back down again. And at the moment, it is trading below the 50-day, below the 100-day, below the 200-day moving averages. And the trend is down for now. How long the dollar will continue to deteriorate, Chris, I don't have a clue. At the moment, the European currencies are strong. If you look at the British pound, you look at the euro, the Swiss franc, they are doing very well. If you look at some of the other currencies, such as the Canadian dollar, the Aussie dollar, to me, at least, they look vulnerable. The Canadian dollar has recently broken through a very important support level, which goes back several years. So usually whenever this kind of price action takes place, you get further movement in that direction. So I think the Canadian dollar will probably deteriorate from here. But the U.S. dollar also looks pretty weak right now. The European currencies look strong to me.
I'd like to shift the conversation over to the silver market. You know, some analysts have pegged the cost of mining silver at around the $20 an ounce level, but prices, of course, declined much lower recently. In January, demand for silver coins sold by the U.S. Mint also quadrupled over the previous figure. Some sources are claiming that mine production may have been disrupted somewhat by these lower prices, as the cost, of course, to produce is essentially a bit higher than the actual spot price.
Well, silver is high beta play on gold. As you know, Chris, you've been following this market for a long time. Whenever the price of gold goes in any direction, silver tends to follow, but with high octane. If you look at silver, silver fell from $50 per ounce to about $20 per ounce. That is a massive smash. And now if you have some real upside in gold, then I think silver may outperform on the upside. This is just the nature of the beast. You know, if you've got money and you are prepared for the volatility, then you go and buy some silver. But I would urge your readers not to get too excited and put everything they own in silver, because when you have moves in silver, they can be exhilarating on both sides. So just be sensible. Buy the amount that you can keep without getting shaken out by the market.
Sales of the American Eagle gold coins, as well as silver coins, have been up sharply, but particularly on silver. The U.S. Mint showing a 63% increase. That's the highest quite some time, quadrupling again. Actually, one reporter there said that they're struggling to meet demand. There seems to be some tie-in here with record demand for silver in India, import curbs on gold, the yellow metal, for quite some time, and there's some talk of that unwinding in 2014. Any thoughts on the Indian import curbs?
Well, I don't really know what's going on over there, but Chris, anything that is related to demand or supply is already in the price. If you look at the price today, you know, the price around $21 an ounce or 22, whatever it is today, is indicative of everything every market participant knows about the supply and demand. The price is always right, and you know, there may be changes which may occur in the future, but if you don't know about that today, there is no point forecasting it. If there was any bullish development in India or elsewhere, I would imagine that the price would have already gone up in anticipation of that. So I generally tend to follow price. For me, price is king, and everything else is just noise. So, you know, maybe there may be changes in China or India. I don't really know. All I do is I just follow price and the zig and zags on the price. But if you also look at the metals, they had a big smash from 2011 until recently. Prices were down. Everybody was buying, or at least people who were excited about the sector were buying. But sellers clearly dominated this market for almost 3 years or 2.5 years. Now we've seen changes in the supply and demand dynamics. Buyers seem to be in control at the moment. Perhaps precious metals became too cheap. Perhaps the market is not concerned now about the tapering. People believe that the economy is not as strong as that they previously believed. Therefore, they think that the tapering is either going to be reduced or withdrawn. And perhaps that is why the metals are going up, and that's why the U.S. dollar is coming down. I don't really know, Chris. I'm just speculating here. I just think that investors are not so sanguine about the state of the world economy now as they were several months ago. I think people are worried that there may be a slowdown of some sorts coming, maybe some problems in China. Who knows? But people are going back into the metals, and that's what is important.
Well, let's also take a look at the Fed's balance sheet. I know that you watch it closely. If you look at the steepness of the ascent, the Fed now has reached about $4.2 trillion on the Fed's balance sheet. You know, all this talk of tapering, it doesn't seem to be showing up in their bottom line. They dropped from about $85 billion, I think, a month to roughly $65 billion, about dropping $10 billion at each FOMC meeting now. That's two in a row. So do you expect Janet Yellen to continue with this process of tapering? What could that mean to this precious metals nascent recovery?
Well, Chris, if you look at The Fed's balance sheet is still expanding because the Fed is still buying additional bonds every month. They may have reduced the rate of purchase or the amount of purchase each month, but they are still net buyers of fixed income securities. That's why the Fed's balance sheet is going up. When they stop a QE altogether and when they start selling those securities, that's when you're going to see a contraction in the Fed's balance sheet. Now, when that will happen, nobody knows. But when that happens, that will be the time to be extremely careful for all assets, because when the Fed's balance sheet contracts and the Fed funds rate goes up and there's genuine monetary contraction, I suspect every asset class, including gold, silver, stocks, property, art, wine, everything will take a big hit. And that will be the time to be in U.S. dollar cash or long-dated U.S. Treasury securities. If you look at credit crunches, whenever you have liquidity withdrawn from the system, if you remember the 2008 crisis, you will recall that gold, silver, everything fell except bonds, government bonds, and U.S. dollars. I think something similar will play out in the future. So you got to watch the Fed's balance sheet carefully and see whether money is being added into the system or dollars are being removed from the system. As long as dollars are being added, you can be long precious metals or you can be long stocks and everything else. But when the tide reverses, you will have to be very careful. And I think the yield curve will also signal at some point that a contraction is coming, if there is a big recession or a bear market coming, I think you're going to get the inversion of the yield curve, and that would be the time to head for the hills.
I'm a bit skeptical with regard to a repeat of 2008. I mean, you might recall that the Fed's balance sheet went up sharply right around that 2008-2009 level. How would bonds and treasuries hold up under such a scenario?
Well, Chris, if you've got a recovery in housing in America, and housing already bottomed out 2 years ago, and if house prices keep going up, not only in America, but also in Europe, and in also some of the bombed out countries in Europe, such as Greece, etc., then, you know, housing is a big employment generator. And we've had this thesis for 2 years. You know, we felt 2 years ago that housing in the U.S. was bottoming out. Indeed, prices have risen over the last 18 months or so. And if housing continues to improve in the U.S., which is a multi-year cycle, then more and more people are going to get back into the workforce and the consumer spending will increase. Prices will go up. The underwater mortgages, the negative equity will disappear. I've seen this experience firsthand in Hong Kong. I mean, we had a similar crash in 1997, but ours was even worse. Prices fell by about 60-65% in real estate. And it took maybe several years for things to get back to normal, but they did get back to normal. And I think in America also, things will get back to normal. It's just a question of time. And when prices go up and negative equities disappear, Chris, people are going to start coming back and spending. Credit creation will pick up. And then inflation will go up, and then you'll get the next cycle of monetary tightening. So it's just a cycle. Markets go up, they go down. You know, we just have to align ourselves with the right direction. That's all. The reason behind the housing recovery is threefold. One is the monetary policy. You know, when interest rates are so low, people who don't really own a real estate and people who are not underwater, they come back and they get attracted by the cheap interest rates and they borrow and they invest and speculate in property. That's what is happening. And if you also look at the supply of the physical properties, you know, there has not been a lot of construction in the U.S. now for several years. And household formation in the U.S. Has continued. So, you know, you've got supply and demand issues. You've got the monetary juice or the monetary stimulus, the cheap credit, which is now freely flowing and available. It's only a question of people feeling confident enough to borrow again, and borrow again they will. History suggests that. So these are the three reasons why the housing market, in my view, is going to continue to appreciate for the next 4 or 5 years in the U.S. and also throughout much of the developed world.
Well, it certainly would be great news for the economy, and of course, the stock market tends to be highly correlated with the sector as well. So, you know, I can see where you're headed. The only wrench that I think I could throw into the mechanism there, you talk about this lack of physical supply, but according to my insider sources, there's roughly 18 million empty homes, and I'm not just talking about houses, we're talking about rentals as well, on this market. That would seem to me to be quite a surfeit, and it could actually put downward pressure on prices in the next few years. That's the only caveat, but I think we've covered that pretty well. Let's move back to the precious metal sector, because that's what our listeners are most interested in today. You know, UBS, the investment bank, has changed their target. They're looking for $1,300 gold by the end of the year. Another couple of investment bankers are also calling for higher precious metals. Citigroup saying that gold is likely bottomed in this cycle, mostly due to increased demand in China. Any thoughts?
Well, as I said, I think the prices seem to have bottomed out for now. Whether or not this is sustainable, I don't really know. But I do know that as long as the metals and the related miners, Chris, stay above the key moving day averages, then you should be long the uptrend and you should stay with the course, you know, not get shaken out by the news. So that's my view at the moment. I think, you know, the tide has turned for the metals after 2.5 years. It's not a bad idea to own some metals.
This time around, as the precious metals are rebounding, we also have a strong stock market as well as a strong housing market. We never saw that over the 12-year gold bull market. Okay, we saw a stagnation in stocks. They never broke out to new highs. And we saw a housing market that, for the most part, suffered at least from, let's say, 2006, 2007. What do you think could be the driver that sends precious metals back to, let's say, just their former 2011 highs?
Chris, that's why, if you recall, I've been very guarded with my assessment of precious metals, because I know that gold is a counter-cyclical asset, so it tends to do well when the economy is weak, and that's why it did really well in the last decade. As you rightly point out, stocks are rising, things are getting better in the West, housing is on the way up, and precious metals have also had a bounce. That's why I'm not so sure about the durability or sustainability of this bounce. You know, I would be happy if it continues to go up, because I'll make money. But as you said, you know, everything can't go up at the same time. Gold has gone up last decade because of the fear factor. It was a fear trade. Now fear is going away from the markets and the economy. Things are healing in the West. So, you know, time will only tell whether all three asset classes can go up together or not. You know, that's why I'm being very guarded and a bit careful with my assessment. I don't want to, you know, mislead your readers into believing that I'm extremely bullish and gung-ho about the metals and that they're going to blast through their old highs. I just don't know at this stage. That's why I'm just taking it one day at a time and just seeing how things play out.
Okay, so I think it would be safe to say that you're cautiously optimistic at this point. And then what would be, let's say, a key resistance level that the metals would need to eclipse to put you firmly back in the bullish camp, please?
Well, I am bullish because I'm long metals. You know, we've got a system, our trend-following system has given us a buy, so we never fight the system. We've bought the metals. And I think, you know, as long as the trend stays up and they stay above the 200-day moving average, which for me really is the key, then you should stay long. The overhead resistances, there are plenty of levels, so they're not really that important in my mind. I think what matters is that they should hold definitely above the 200-day moving average, because if any pullback fails to hold above that level and prices go down again, to my mind, this would have been nothing more than a relief rally, and I will get out again. I don't want to be in any position where I lose money and see the loss get bigger and bigger. So everybody has different trading philosophies. From our point of view, we protect each and every single position with a strict protective trailing stop. And if the metals start to weaken again and things go bad, we will just get out and move on to the next thing. You know, I'm not married to gold or silver or anything else. I'm in this game to make money.
Anything else on your radar screen that you're watching you'd like to share with the listeners today?
Yeah, well, Chris, I have spent 15 years in this business, and I've learned from my own painful experience that the market is always right. Your opinion can be wrong, your judgment can be wrong, your biases can be wrong, but the price never lies. The price is the truth. If you are bullish and the price keeps going down and down and down, the price isn't wrong. The market knows more than anybody else, and people who are confident and arrogant in this business and people who believe that they know the best don't do very well, and they don't last. A few years ago, and I realized you cannot be brave and arrogant in this business, because so from my point of view, you know, I generally now try and avoid making extremely high conviction forecasts, because I just know from experience that eventually one day I will be wrong, and then that will be the end of it for me, and I don't want to put myself or our investors in that position. That's why we, you know, don't allocate too much to one sector, and whenever we put on a trade on stocks or metals or anything else, we always protect each and every single position with a strict trailing stop loss. And once we are in a trade, we never ever meddle with it. We have an automated trading system which gets us out at the right time by a trailing stop. So once we are in it, we have absolutely no discretion on when we exit. The price tells us and the volatility tells us when to exit and cover the position, whether it is at a big profit or at a small loss. But what we try and do, Chris, is to avoid the big loss. You know, if you are wrong and if you lose 7 or 8 or 10%, you only need to make about 10% to get back your capital. If you lose 50%, you need to double your money to get back to starting point. So you've got to avoid the big losses in this business. And the only way to do that is to protect the downside, to diversify, to spread your eggs in different baskets and watch all of them very carefully. You don't put all your money in one asset. You don't put anything that you own in silver or gold, and you don't hope and pray. That's not the way to invest. That's the way to the poorhouse. You want to diversify, you want to protect your positions, and you want to have a sensible approach and not have such a high conviction that you just don't see what is really happening in the markets. And the price, in my view, Chris, never ever lies.
Well, I only wish that I had asked you to write the foreword for Wealth Building Strategies, because it is a perfect synopsis of my thoughts and has been ever since the dot-com implosion. At the risk of getting a bit academic, there was a brilliant statistician in England who proved over many, many experiments that the collective guesses of individuals always better than anyone, even the outliers at the edge of the bell curve, of the Gaussian curve. Let's say, for instance, we have a jar of marbles. I take this jar of marbles to 300 or 400 people all throughout the city and just ask them for their guess. You're going to have outliers of 5,000 and outliers of 50. But by the time they're all averaged together, these guesses are all averaged, you're going to be close to 99% accurate, even higher, more like 99.6%. And almost every single time you run this test, every day, the closing market price is the best guess of millions of people. And that's why your point, I think, is so salient, and I hope that it hits home with all our listeners, because if you can just accept the fact that no one knows more than the market, then you start to set up these investing parameters that Peru has mentioned, such as limiting your losses generally to 5% on any one trade, and certainly no more than of your total portfolio of more than 1 or 2% on any individual trade, and let your winners run for as long as possible, trailing out of them on swing lows, for instance. It's just a fantastic way to preserve your capital, and your portfolio will thank you. Okay, Peru, we'll look forward to having you back on GoldSeek.com radio. Thanks.
So anytime, Chris, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure talking to you.